Lucifer, son of the morning, I'm gonna chase you out of earth.
Shalom Israel, Shabbat Shalom. Welcome to another edition of Blueprint for Life, brought to you by At Last Ministries here on Blog Talk Radio. Let me start this by saying the Shema, which is "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one God. Hear, O Israel, the Lord Ahaya is one God." All praises to the Most High for what He has done, what He has created. But this is a day that He has made and that He has ordained in the annals of the earth, for it to be a day where everything ceases, where we rest, and where we take complete advantage of the opportunity to reflect on Him and worship Him in spirit and in truth for what He is and what He has done. He is awesome. The Most High is the one and only true God. Everything else is pretty much is a lie. Satan is the father of lies. Everything hails in comparisons. Nothing else can compare to the Most High, the creator of everything that exists around us. My prayer is that you've had a wonderful, or even if it was stressful, that you got through your 6 days, you were able to take care of your family, take care of yourself, and that you are content with the things that you have around you and with the peace that He's given you. The biggest blessing on this earth right now is to have peace of mind. biggest blessings on this earth right now is to have full control of your faculties, and that you are not being overwhelmed, inundated with stress, or numbed out by narcotics, alcohol, weed, everything, sexual addictions that this world is trying to just force upon you. But you have the wherewithal to actually get a grasp on your life, this earth, and how to occupy until he comes, and that you have the testicular fortitude to be able to stand against all the entrapments of this earth and this world and not let them overwhelm you. Let's go to the Father in prayer. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. May thy kingdom come, and thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from all manner of evil. For the kingdom and the power forever and ever. As we assemble together over the airwaves, try not to be before you long. We're going to do a lot of reading today, and you'll be able to keep up with us. We're going to go over a few precepts today to try to get an understanding the Torah and in the Tanakh. And we always like to kind of start off by going over some of the laws that were given to the people, the Mosaic laws given to us from Mount Sinai, over 613 laws. And this is why we have this teaching and show called A Blueprint for Life. Yes, these laws still exist. Look at 1 John, the first chapter. Look at 1 John 2 and 3. We hereby do know that we know him if we keep his commandments. If you say you love him, you keep not his commandments. You are a liar and the truth is not in you. 1 John 3 and 4. Whenever we sinneth, we transgresseth the law. For sin is transgression. So when you get the new covenant, it confirms that Christ came to fulfill the law, which was all the prophecies in the Tanakh about the law coming, not to do away with it. And the two things that he said to keep, for us to love our fellow man, which means Israel now, as yourself, and to love the Most High with your whole heart, well, we find that summed up in the Ten Commandments, and you must understand that. For the first six commandments pertain to how you respect and honor the Most High. And then the next four commandments pretty much talk about how you treat your fellow man, honoring your mother and your father, your neighbor, not murdering, et cetera, et cetera. These things are indicative of how you should live your life, of a successful life. It is the blueprint for life to keep you set apart, to keep you holy, to keep you Kodesh. Nothing else is going to navigate you, brothers and sisters, in these last days, but a relationship with the Most High that comes from keeping his statutes, laws, and commandments. Not a Christian way of showing up every Sunday, the first day of the week, and going through a ritual, religious servitude to doctrine, denomination, and religion by being on an auxiliary. That's not fortifying your relationship with the Most High. What is when you're alone and you seek him through his laws and commandments, and you pray when you're alone, when you're out, you find time to just nurture your relationship with him. So these are the things that are important, and that's why we assemble ourselves to try and go over these laws and reflect. And we will go into Acts 13 to see how they did it after Christ had passed away, and how the disciples carried on in the reading of the laws and exhorting one another. Today, out of the 613, I just want to maybe go into a few of them as it pertains to, the importance of the Shema that I just read, that you'll find in Deuteronomy 6 and 4, and also understand Deuteronomy 6 and 7. Deuteronomy 6 and 4, the Shema is pretty much what I cited at the beginning of the show, but did you know that we were to recite the Shema and the laws as often as possible in the morning and in the evening with our children, our family? We talked about this a bit last week, that we're to always discuss the law, not the latest gossip, not to talk about fear of what's coming on the earth. All we do is look at the current events in our society and equate that to the timeline that's been given to us in the scriptures to better understand that Christ is coming back and he's on his way soon. Yeshua HaMashiach, our big brother who's coming back soon. And so we're able to keep prophecy, look at current events, but not with fear, to understand like we're running out of time and we must work while it's day because the night cometh. And there's going to be a time, and we're talking about this even more. I hear this being echoed all over the world by all my brothers and sisters, that there's going to come a time that we won't be able to rely on what we rely on, such as a telephone, such as an internet, things to keep in touch and to remember the word. You're going to have to start remembering these scriptures and where they're found in your mind and in your heart. You won't, you know, we'll still have Bibles, but who knows? There may come a time where it's like that movie, The Book of Eli with Denzel, where he had the last Bible on the earth. There's a lot of us, I hear stories of people taking their Bibles to work and employers taking them from them and hiding them. I can remember being somewhere in a hospital and the nurses took away my Bible. There are people that hate this word and hate what it stands for because it cries out loud against homosexuality and gay marriage. It forces people to conform and change their lives, and nobody wants to be told what to do, which is why young people today, their number one credo is YOLO, which stands for you only live once. So they're giving each other a license to do and try everything because you don't know if tomorrow's promised to you. So therefore, act a fool and live a life of just hedonism and just a sinful life. And that whole credo for them enforces that. So this is what your young people are dealing with, which is why you got your daughters trying to kiss on other women, your son trying to kiss on other boys, and trying a bisexual lifestyle, trying weed, trying vapor cigarettes, vapor weed, trying every pill, every drug, every molly, trying to do ice bucket challenges, trying to do fire challenges in the shower. Just stupid. Just out try and do anything and everything, but conform to something that's going to keep me, help me, and bless me, which are the statutes and laws. Our Shema, if you're able to do it, you should write it on paper and put it in your home. If you're able to do it, you should frame it and put it on your wall. If you're able to do it, you should write it on your door, on your doorposts. What we used to do, our forefathers, they would have things called phylacteries. And phylacteries were things that were kept on the wrist of the men. And they would peel back leather on their wrist, and there was written all the 613 laws that they could refer to in the case of a law being broken in the village or amongst the fellow tribesmen, so they could always refer back to God's laws. They kept it near and dear to their hearts. They were called phylacteries. You can look that up. You can Google it. Look in Wikipedia. I'm not saying that's something you need to do, but it would be advantageous because one of the laws says for us to write down all the laws. Now, all of you know it's easier to remember something when you write it down. As a matter of fact, all these iPads and laptops and computers are taking our kids away from understanding and writing things and committing it to memory. There's something about writing that has the ability to allow our minds to visualize it and hold on to it. And now we're much later. Our children are addicted to technology and electronics because there's programming and spirits that come through the TV that can cause an addiction, and you feel disconnected. Our people literally feel unplugged when they're not plugged into what that media is pumping to them. They feel like, I don't exist. When in fact, you came from the dirt, the dust, the earth, and as long as you can walk outside, stand in the sunshine, and take a deep breath, and stand next to a tree, and hug a tree, and pick a flower, you are connected, but you're connected to the source and from what you come from. But all of that understanding has been distorted through what this world is imputing upon us that tell us we don't exist unless we have the best of everything. What is the best stuff? The stuff that Satan, after Christ fasted for 40 days and 40 nights, took him on the top of the hill and said, all this is mine, and I'll give it to you if you worship me. So these are the things we need to understand. Brothers and sisters, the commandments were never done away with, and we need to come back to them. If you look at Acts 13th chapter in the 15th verse, in Antioch, this is after Christ ascended back into the heavens, and the disciples were continuing with ministry in the Great Commission, where he said, go and make disciples out of all men. He didn't say go make Christians. So I'm just going to put that out there. I don't have a problem with pre-Constantine Christianity, but most of post-Constantine, which is 70 AD Christianity, has been paganized. We don't keep the feast, the Passover, the Feast of Tabernacles, the Day of Atonement. There's many more festivals. But we want to keep Easter pagan. Rabbit, bunny rabbit, chicken coming out the egg, Easter egg hunting, paint. All of this is Babylonian pagan practices. We want to do birthdays where we go make cakes and put candles on it and blow it out. You should honor the day you were born, but you don't start getting into the customs that are Babylonian. The reason they made cakes, because in the Old Testament, they made cakes, the women made cakes unto a goddess by the name of Astarte. And Astarte is where we get the name Easter from, and they made cakes and dedicated it to that goddess. And a lot of people don't know where all these rituals and practices that we just grow up into, where they actually originate from. We want to keep Christmas talking about Christ is born on December 25th, and you can't find that anywhere in the Word. As a matter of fact, if you go to Luke, the second chapter, you'll find out that the Mashiach's parents every year went up to Jerusalem to celebrate the Passover. They took their son, who you call Jesus the Christ, to celebrate Passover. You don't even keep Passover because you don't even know what it's about. You think it's just a Jewish tradition, not knowing that those people are the synagogue of Satan, spoken of in Revelations 2 and 9 and Revelations 3 and 9. But even in the book of Luke, it says that when Christ became 12 years old, they took him to Jerusalem to celebrate the Passover, which clearly states that his birthday was around the time of the Passover. Not in the dead of winter would you find somebody in a manger having a baby in the freezing cold below zero. You got to be kidding me. Talking about three wise men following a star, and you can't see a star in a snowstorm. So, let's understand that these customs and laws were never done away with, and they are indicative to a prosperous, healthy, successful life. Don't worry about this Ebola if you're keeping the commandments and laws. But if you let them shoot you up with every vaccination, you dependent on man, and your God is a dude in a long white coat with a tablet and a prescription pad, if that's your God, man, may he help you in your time of trouble. But the remnant that will depend on the Most High in the day of trouble and can call on him and know his name, the name that he gave Moses, Ahiah, and his son, Yeshua HaMashiach, the ones that know who he is and can call on him and are willing to strip themselves away from this world and this life and follow him, you will he protect, like he mentioned in Psalms 91:1. So I want to exhort you like they did in Acts 13 and 15. It says, and after the reading of the law, we just read the law, which was the Shema. I'm not going to go into too many of the other laws today because I got a reading to do. But after the reading of the law and the prophets, that means that after the reading of the Torah and the Tanakh, the rulers of the synagogue, that was the elders and pastors of that particular gathering place, that assembly, sent unto them, saying, ye men and brethren, if ye have any word of exhortation to the people, say on. And then verse 16 says, then Paul stood up and beckoning with his hand, said, men of Israel, and ye that fear the Most High, listen to me. So he was preaching. He began to preach. He was very animated at the time, and he drew their attention to him. The Most High of this people of Israel chose our fathers and exalted the people when they dwelt as strangers in the land of Egypt, and with a high arm brought he them out of it. It goes on to let you know that after they read the laws, and Paul and Barnabas were sitting in the back, and the preachers, pastors pretty much called them up and asked them what they like to have works. You're used to that. You remember that. And they came up and began to preach unto the people. We exhort you today that no weapon formed against you can prosper. And every tongue that rises up against you, you shall condemn. That's Isaiah 54 and 17. That greater is that is in you than anything that's in the world. And that he will not in any ways cast you out if you keep these laws. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Most High delivereth us out of them all. We must remember that. We are here to do a job, and we are going to do that job, which is preach and teach to Israel and raise our people up and be ready for Christ when he comes. I want to go into Micah, the fourth chapter. As soon as we come back, I just want to, I just want to play a little bit of this because it's not even under you. It might bless you a little bit, but this is actually to let Satan know how we feel, what we're about on the Shabbat, what we stand for, what we're not going to tolerate. We're not going to compromise. Don't go out into the world. You don't have to go to the mall. You don't have to go have breakfast somewhere else. Sit back in your house, reflect on him, and let the Most High bless you and keep you.
We're going to tear your kingdom down. Oh. Stand up. We're going to tear your kingdom down. Oh, yeah. You've been a building your kingdom. Oh, Lord.
Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat Shalom. It's a fixed fight. Satan is definitely going to lose. Just had to put that out there. A couple of times I tried to download that, and this particular radio station wouldn't allow for that download, so I had to play live. Just a message out there, just like the song we opened up with. Lucifer, son of the morning, I'm going to chase you out of earth. And that is our job. You know, Satan can't do anything to the people of the Most High unless he gets permission from the Most High. We are victorious, and we will be victorious, and there is a remnant of people that he's going to bring through all this stuff, place us in the wilderness. I don't want to get ahead of myself. We're going to cover some of that. Got quite a bit to read to you today. So if you got your scripture, your Bible with me, let's go to Micah, the fourth chapter. And Micah, the book of Micah, is found after Obadiah. It's at the end of the Tanakh. It's before Haggai, before Habakkuk. And I'm going to start with Micah, the fourth chapter. It says, but in the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain... Well, let me give some background real quick on Micah before I even start that. Something really important to understand about Micah is that he was a contemporary with Isaiah. And they were around about the same time frame, but his name meant who was like the Most High. That is what his name meant, who was like Ahiah. And on top of that, he was more of a prophet that dealt with the common man. Isaiah dealt with a lot of rulers and leaders and officials, but Micah was more with the common man as we would say, the lower class and the lower middle class, that he dealt with those people. And these were their assignments as prophets, who they had, who the Most High assigned them to, who their message was to. Even though their books bless all of us, they dealt with a certain populace of people. And the thing I like about Micah is his candor and how he deals with Israel, how he approaches us. And some people think it's kind of harsh. And even some of his writings seem to be a little bit sarcastic, with sarcasm, when he even evokes the meaning of his name as far as what it means. And he says that in one of the scriptures. And this is one of the books not too many people reference, but you will see Micah, the fourth chapter, is very important to us. The prophecy in the fourth chapter is made concerning about one who will come and bring about an end to all warfare on earth. And you hear it spoke of, like I said, parallels in Isaiah, the ninth chapter and the second chapter. So we'll hear a lot of parallels, because Isaiah spoke about, Micah's going to speak about in Isaiah 9 and 6, and he called this person by name and said he's the Prince of Peace. And he also speaks about the second coming. And the second coming we know is referred to in 1 Thessalonians 5 and 2. There is another precept there. So let me start this book of Micah. In the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain of the house of the Most High shall be established in the top of the mountains, and it shall be exalted above the hills. The people shall flow unto it. When Christ returns and he establishes a place of the principles where the laws and statutes will be teached, and he returns to the earth, people will be drawn to it, because we know this will be a dark time. You know, there's a scripture, and I don't have it before me, that says for us not to keep praying, hurry up and send the day of the Lord, because he makes it clear that that's going to be a dark day. It won't be as what we are experiencing right now. I don't know where you are in this earth, but where I'm at, it's sunshine, there's clouds. It's a beautiful day that the Most High has created. It won't be like that in the day of the Lord. It's going to be a dark day, death, dismay, what people call violence and natural disasters. But actually, it's going to be the hand of the Most High bringing judgment upon people who reject him and don't accept him, who have decided to live in sin. And I hate to say it, but I can't wait till he comes and deals with these people who comfortably live in their sin and mock the Most High, and go to church and say, I know him, I got a relationship with him, because he loves the whole world. He loves me, you know, and they don't even understand that the scripture tells us that in Malachi, he told us, Jacob I love and Esau I've hated. Most people don't say nothing about Malachi until it's time to talk about tithes and to get money. That's the only thing y'all know about Malachi, but he makes it clear. And then these Christians with their we're supposed to be disciples. Let me go back to that. I'm not just putting down Christians, because that's my foundation. We were given the name Christians by the Greeks as a form of mockery, pointing us out. When Christ made it clear, go make disciples. He didn't say go make people Christians. He said go make disciples. And he told us to pray to the Father, not him. Nevertheless, we're so quick to go to St. John 3:16, but God so loved the world. But there are many worlds. There's the sports world. There's this gay world. There are different worlds. World refers to a particular microcosm and group of people. How do I back that up? Isaiah 45 and 17 calls Israel a world without end. There's no way that my father is going to say, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, and then say, love not the world, nor the things in the world. He does not contradict himself. It's the way that these scriptures are being preached and taught to you that make people think it's contradictory. And you have to put all the precepts together to understand that. So if anybody deals with you about John 3:16, you just go to Isaiah 45 and 17 and deal with them on that. That's not my lesson today. I just wanted to throw that out real quick so you'd understand that. Let me go back to Micah, the fourth chapter. I don't want to stop too much and kind of exegete every verse, because there's a lot of reading and a lot of it's self-explanatory. As Micah, the fourth chapter, and the second verse says, and many nations shall come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord and to the house of the Most High of Jacob,
and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths, for the law shall go forth of Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. We will be teaching Zion, his people, Israel, will be teaching the commandments and precepts in the last days after that tribulation, and he's getting ready to establish a new heaven and earth. But it says right here, many other nations. That means the people that are left, that are alive, that have survived after World War III and all this devastation. There will be people here that will say, truly, these are the children of the Most High. He's not going to destroy all of them, and then there's nobody here to see that we were always the people. It makes it clear that many nations, and we know that the word nations was changed in our day and time to race. Word that just popped up on the scene. Instead of nations, they have imputed race, because nations were certain groups of people who worshiped certain gods, but now we call them a different race. Asian race, Chinese race, you know, Russian race, African race. We call them the different races. But if you actually look at the fact that we still have a building and group of people called the United Nations, you notice that with the United Nations, there are many different races represented. And countries, and languages. And we're the only people that have been stripped of our heritage, our language, our nation, and nobody will fight for us, buy us, or purchase us, as mentioned in Deuteronomy 28. And these United Nations are referred to in the book of Psalms, the 83rd chapter, that they have risen. They are making a tumult, and they have said, let us take Israel away. Let's erase their name off of the face of the earth. You read it in your spare time. Micah, the 4th chapter and the 3rd verse. And he shall judge among many people and rebuke strong nations. Who are these strong nations? The ones that are the EU, and the ones that run this world right now. And your Germanys and your Great Britons, which are, with its kings and queens and princes. And all these other what we call superpowers, China. I think I did mention Russia. It says in the 3rd verse that he's going to judge among many people and rebuke strong nations afar off, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up a sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. You've got to know that in the book of Enoch, it tells you that the fallen angels taught men war and taught men the art of turning metals into weapons and how to fight one another. And the Most High is making it clear that when Christ comes back and sets up his kingdom on the earth for the Father, that he's going to give it back to, that there will be war no more, and that all these weapons of mass destruction, these tanks, then it was referred to as swords and plowshares. But no, he's in reference to your Mac-9s, your M-9s, your guns, your drones, everything. He's going to do away with all these weapons. They're going to be done away with. Every nation will give them up, and every tongue is going to bow and confess. Study war no more. This is why you know that the people over in Israel that are claiming to be the people of the Most High are not the people, because he made it clear when we are restored in the land with our God that there will be real peace, no more weapons, no more destruction, no more fighting. It has been made clear. Let me go into verse 4. But they shall sit every man under his vine and under his fig tree, and none shall make them afraid. For the mouth of the Lord of hosts has spoken it. For all people will walk, every one, in the name of his God, and we will walk in the name of the Most High forever and ever. That's eternal life that he's speaking of for the people of the Most High. I'm going to go on to verse 6. In that day, saith the Lord, will I assemble her that halteth, and I will gather her that is driven out, and her that I have afflicted. He's in reference to his children that Deuteronomy 28 and 68 and throughout Deuteronomy 28 that he was upset with because we wouldn't keep his laws and we wanted to follow the ways of the Gentile and we wanted to be heathenistic and follow Satan's ways and worship Yahweh, Jabulon, golden calves that we made and gods of wood and stone. He's saying, I drove you out, but I will gather you and her that I have afflicted. We are the ones that are afflicted because of our disobedience. Verse 7, and I will make her that halted a remnant and her that was cast far off a strong nation. All praises to the Most High. He's saying that he will assemble us again and make us a nation, put us together. Imagine all these people that are scattered all over the world. Somebody made a reference to the fact that when you watch the Olympics, it's amazing how you see all these countries represented in the track races, but they're all black. They all look like brothers and cousins. You got Team Jamaica, Team London, Team Australia, and their best runners are these black dudes that live in these countries. Those are your brothers and sisters that have been scattered throughout the four corners of this earth. This is who he's talking about. He's going to gather us together. We are speaking the same language as the nations that we live in. So we are scattered amongst those nations, which is why we are the whole world, because we've been scattered all over the world. And I want you to know that was a strategic move on behalf of the Most High. Because if we were concentrated in one area, we would be like a nation, and we'd be easily, even more easily destroyed by those of Psalms 83, all the other nations that want to do away with the Most High's chosen people. But strategically, he scattered us to the four corners of the earth. And he's saying he's going to gather us together again and make us a strong nation. We'll study war no more. There'll be no weapons. We shall walk in peace, keep the statutes and laws of the Most High. Verse 8, and thou, O tower of the flock, the stronghold of the daughter of Zion, unto thee shall it come. Even the first dominion, the kingdom, shall come to the daughter of Jerusalem. Now why dost thou cry out aloud? Is there no king in thee? Is thy counselor perished? For pains have taken thee as a woman in travail. Be in pain and labor to bring forth, O daughter of Zion, like a woman in travail. For now shalt thou go forth out of the city, and thou shalt dwell in the field, and thou shalt go even to Babylon. There shalt thou be delivered. There the Lord shall redeem thee from the hand of thine enemies. Here he was saying that during these times of travail and waiting for his return, he's making it clear to Micah all the places we would be. But at the end of the verse, he's saying, in all these places, I'm going to deliver you from these places. And he said, I will redeem you from the hand of your enemies. Who are your enemies? Your oppressors. Mm-hmm. The ones that made you slaves, that make you work hard, that won't let you catch a break. The ones that shoot your babies in the back in the streets. The one that every time you walk out your house, you got to be in fear of because you reach for your wallet, they shoot you 9 times. These are your enemies that don't want to see you get ahead of them ever again, that won't let you get the promotion. Don't want you to have the nice house. Don't want you to be in that neighborhood. Don't you think because Billy Bob and Becky Sue smile in your face that they love you? Now, I'm not saying race things, but our brothers and sisters are the ones that keep these statutes, laws, and commandments and know who we are and honor us, not the ones that saying, oh, I follow Caesar Borgia, this image of Christ, and you're nothing, because you know that image of Christ was used to kind of further racism and get everybody to worship that particular image so that they could lift themselves up to the top. Because who wants to hear that their particular race is hated by the Most High? Nobody wants to hear that. But thanks be to the Father, he's gracious. He's not going to let them rule again, but he makes it clear that you must be born again. You're not to preach or teach these laws because Israel are the preachers and teachers. And you're to follow Israel, follow the laws, because you're the stranger and you are the Gentile. Let me go on to verse 11. Now also many nations are gathered against thee. Let her be defiled, and let our eye look upon Zion. But they know not the thoughts of the Most High, neither understand they his counsel, for he shall gather them as the sheaves into the floor. Arise and thresh, O daughter of Zion, for I will make thine horn iron, and I will make thy hoofs brass, and thou shalt beat in pieces many people. I'm sorry, he said it right here in the scriptures. There's going to be some destruction. There's going to be some warring. There will be Joel's army, spoken of in Joel, the third chapter, second chapter. There will be many that will fight with Christ. His vesture will be dipped in blood. There will be bloodshed for the enemies of the Most High and his cross. And there will be those that, when they see him come back, will be changed and transformed and will do great exploits, like the men of David and David's army, how one man could put 400 or 800 men to death with his bare hands. How Samson could have the jawbone of an ass and slay a large army of men. There's going to be death and destruction for the haters of the Most High and the haters of Christ. I'm sorry, you cannot get away from it. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. Let me finish this. And I will consecrate their gain unto the Lord, and their substance unto the Lord of the whole earth. Let's look at a precept for everything we've just read. Let's look at Isaiah, the second chapter. Before I go there, I want you to understand that the verses that we just read look at the conditions at the end of the Great Tribulation, 6 through 8, and God's promise to the city of Jerusalem in that day, which is the day of the Lord. And if you want to know more about the day of the Lord, you can see Zephaniah 1 and 7. And it talks about the millennial kingdom in its crisis time. We're going to Isaiah now to find out about that. You can also see Jeremiah 30 and 8, Ezekiel 30 and 9, Ezekiel 36 and 33. Furthermore, you need to understand that when you hear the word in that day, it refers to immediate judgments and judgments of the day of the Lord. And most of this has to talk about the regathering of Israel, the true Israel, not the synagogue of Satan, as spoken of in Revelations 2 and 9 and 3 and 9. Those people over there now, those are not his people. Those are Khazars, Khazarian transplants that took on the religion because they did not want to take on Christianity during the Spanish conquest, and they did not want to take on Islam. So I forget the word I'm trying to use, but they went over into Jewish customs and began to learn a language called Yiddish. They didn't even truly speak Hebrew. They didn't even understand phonetic Hebrew. They tried to put it together with the Tetragrammaton to keep our customs. And they're following a lunar calendar, which is off. And we need to understand that. I don't want to teach them that today, but the Essenes, which were like the Zadok priesthood, they kept the prophecies and the true calendar of the Most High to understand when we should keep the feast and festivals. And we'll be getting into that in the future to understand the Essene calendar. The Essenes are the ones that kept the Torah, the Tanakh, the scriptures, the writings of the apostles, and they stayed in the way of the Most High. Made sure that they kept up everything as Roman invasion came about, Greek invasion came about, and this pseudo-Christianity came about. They kept the ways of the Most High. Let's look at Isaiah, the second chapter, and it says, true peace, the word that Isaiah, the son of Amos, saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. Verse 2, and it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it. This is the same thing Micah talked about in the fourth chapter. So you see them paralleling each other and speaking the same thing to different groups and levels of people as it pertains to their financial status, their esteem within the earth. But they were in one accord. This is why the scripture says, let everything be established in the mouth of two or three witnesses. So, once again, we have true peace being spoken of by Isaiah in the second verse. Third verse says, and many people shall go and say, come, and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his path. For out of Zion shall go forth the law. In that day, when Christ returns and that mountain is established, and everybody's like saying, oh, he exists real. He is the one true God. They'll be going to Jerusalem so they can learn what we talk about every Shabbat, the laws. What we heard them talk about after Christ ascended in Acts 13 and 15, the law. You cannot do away with the law. When you go to court, you are judged by standards that have been set. A law. A lawless society is a degraded society. You cannot live without the law. But the law that trumps all laws, that's supreme, is the law of God, which he sang in the day of the Lord. Himself, everyone will come to hear the law. You don't want to keep the laws, but you want to stop at a stop sign and get a $40 ticket. You got to be kidding me. You scared a man, you fear man more than you fear the Most High.
Mm-hmm.
Isaiah 2 and 3, many people shall go and say, ye, let us go up in of the Lord to the house of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the Lord, and the word of the Lord, and he shall judge among the nations that are the races, and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares. So yeah, there will be gun control when the Father comes back, but not this one the man is talking about. So he can take your guns and come in your house and imprison you, kill you, shoot you, force the mark of the beast and vaccinations on you. No, the gun control that we want to see is when the Father comes back and he does away with violence completely. And the lion will lay with the lamb side by side. And he shall judge among the nations and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more, as they learned back in the book of Enoch from the watchers, the fallen angels that slept with the daughters of men, as spoken of in Genesis, the 6th chapter, since a lot of y'all are scared of the book of Enoch. Even though Jude talks about Enoch and Genesis, the 6th chapter, it expounds, it gives you better understanding of where these sinful desires and teachings of war and sorcery came from. Verse 5, O house of Jacob, come ye and let us walk in the light of the Lord. Therefore thou hast forsaken thy people, the house of Jacob, because they be replenished from the east and are soothsayers like the Philistines. And they please themselves in the children of strangers. What is that saying? It's saying how the people have walked away from the Most High and were looking for false prophets, divination, sorcery, read my palm, help me understand how this is going to happen, pleasing themselves with other children of strangers, laying and sleeping and partying and having sex with other nations and taking on the customs and ways of the strangers who have gotten ahead of us. Their land also is full of silver and gold. Neither is there any end of their treasures. That means your big homes, your lavish living, your all your jewelry, your latest technology, and all your crystal drink, and your lobster, and your steak, and your shrimp. All the so-called accoutrements of a fine life. Lavish living. And you're never satisfied. Trust me, most people that are in a debauchery of sin and that chase these things are never satisfied. Have you ever seen somebody? I've seen it. The richest of rich are so unhappy because they realize that it was not the key or source of happiness. It's always another car, the latest gadget, the latest show. I need this. I want this. I want this. I need this. You think that's the source of happiness? The only source of happiness is through the Most High, contentment and peace that comes through Christ and the Most High. Because this world will constantly make you chase something. And they keep that in your face. What's the latest? What's the greatest? What's the newest? What's the new hit? What's the new fashion? What's the news everybody eating? What is everybody drinking? What is the latest craze? This is Satan's world. He's put that on us. On us forever. He said, come to this world. When you realize that coming in eternal life and eternal salvation, you become content. Stop for a minute and think about a life with no end, with total peace, no violence, no war, and being able to live off the land and the earth, not having to pay for something that's freely given, water bill. You got to be kidding me. Not having to pay for heat. not having to pay for your food because the food is there. He gave us everything we needed. He created this earth for his people, the children of Israel. And Satan has been angry and came down here to destroy it ever since he rebelled against the Most High, took a third of his angels, got together with them watchers, and set up many of his generals and sergeants all in the earth. And since those giants were created from when the angels slept with women, the daughters of men, Christian Church lied to you and told you that these angels can't transform themselves and take on human characteristics and have sex with women. That's a lie. That's why I'm reading these books. Scripture tells us that we need to be careful because we entertain angels unaware. And they have the ability to take on any form and eat and inhabit the earth. Every time angels come down, it was like Christ came as a spirit form, walked through the wall, asked for some fish and honeycombs. Let's understand that this imputes riches on when it says the land is also full of horses. Today their land is full of Teslas, Maseratis, Porsches, everything. Those are the horses that we use today. That's what we get around in. No more horse and buggies. But this is what the prophet saw then. And our world is filled with all of the latest technology of cars, and we just lust after that. Is there any end of their chariots? This is what Isaiah asked. Their land is also full of idols. They worship the work of their own hands, that which their own fingers have made. The unmitigated goal to sit up and have a factory make a bunch of crosses, pulpits, trinkets, beads, and we actually use that as a symbol of worship and trying to say, well, I'm not worshiping, but yet you still look to that. Even in these Christian churches, what do you see on the wall at the top? A big old cross. That was the death chair. Are my followers, say I'm a leader and I got followers and I commit a crime, they accuse me of a crime, they kill me in an electric chair. When I go on, what you going to do, worship that chair, put a big electric chair in the assembly and look at it and be like, oh, it's not it, wood and stone. Deuteronomy 28 told us that they would worship stone and wood. Islam, they go to Mecca and march around that Kaaba stone. Thousands of people. And in the middle of that Kaaba stone is this opening, which is fashioned after a woman's private parts. After you've marched around so many times, you're supposed to stick your head in this little circular thing that looks like a you-know-what and kiss it. Because the goddess of Islam, it was a female deity that they're worshiping. And they don't even want to tell you that. Study the origins of Islam. You are worshiping things in this earth that were made by man. And some of you just worship, talk about Mother Nature. You just worship your plants, worship your animals, worship your children, worship what you bought with your own hands. And so we have things really twisted. Let me get back to what Isaiah is saying that parallels Micah. Verse 9, and the mean man bowed down, and the great man humbleth himself. Therefore, forgive them not. That's deep. Selah. Therefore, forgive them not. Enter into the rock and hide thee in the dust, for the fear of the Lord and for the glory of his majesty. The lawless of man shall be humbled, and the haughtiness of men shall be bowed down. The Lord alone shall be exalted in that day. For the day of the Lord of hosts shall be upon everyone that is proud and lofty. Let me read that again, Isaiah 2 and 12. For the day of the Lord, we know what that reference is. The day of the Lord is going to be a day of judgment, darkness, and recompense. For the day of the Lord of hosts shall be upon everyone that is proud and lofty, walking around thinking you all that. You better than everyone. But I don't know what it's even based on. Half the times people walking around here arrogant and don't have a pot to pee in. I don't understand. He's making it clear, judgment is coming your way. Humility is the way. For he said, the meek shall inherit the earth. For the day of the Lord of hosts shall be upon every one that is proud and lofty, and upon everyone that is lifted.
Sorry about that, brothers and sisters. We were disconnected somehow. I don't know where we left off. I'm going to go back to Isaiah 2. 14. I guess somebody got mad. Just disconnected and automatically called back in. But I'm in Isaiah, the second chapter, and the 15th verse. And upon every high tower and upon every fenced wall, all the ships of Tarshish, and upon all pleasant pictures, that's desires of mind that you kind of lust after. That's a trip, because we live in a time where the Christian church and your motivational speakers all say, get an image of it, a picture of it, and if you can conceive it, it can. You can. These are things of witchcraft, to where you're trying to cause things to manifest by you believing it and seeing it. Christ had never said that. He said, "Seek me first, seek the kingdom of heaven," and he said all of our needs would be supplied. It's okay to have some wants, but he didn't never say go around just looking after pictures in your mind and try to make it manifest, and it's just going to materialize. That's New Age, New World religion talk. Verse 18, and the idols he shall utterly abolish. The Most High said he's going to destroy all idols. Listen to verse 19. And they shall go into the holes of the rocks and into the caves of the earth for fear of the Lord. Why are they going into rocks and into the earth? Because this technology, this world, these houses, all this stuff they built is not going to save them in the day of the Lord, the day of Most High, the day of vengeance and recompense. They got bunkers that they're trying to sell you on TV, emergency shelters, bunkers, survival kits, three-day food kits in Walmart, everything, thinking that's going to help them survive. They are afraid because they know something's coming, but they think it's an alien invasion. Russia is your next-door neighbor. We working hand in hand with Russia. That's the Cold War. That's over. And not the enemy. This is a united front against Christ, because they know he's coming back. And there's fear all throughout the land. They shall go into the holes of the rocks and into the caves of the earth for fear of the Lord and for the glory of his majesty when he ariseth to shake terribly the earth. Did you hear that? Isaiah 12 and 19. He will rise up and he's going to shake the whole earth. You can go run and get you a passport and go over somewhere else and think you closer or talk about the boat going to pick you up from there. But he's going to shake the whole earth. The whole earth. The whole earth. Not just America, Babylon. The whole earth. Verse 20, in that day a man shall cast his idols of silver, his idols of gold, which they made, each one for himself, to worship. They're going to cast it to the in the back. They're going to say, take this silver, this gold, this watch, this cross, this stone, this chain. They're going to throw it down to the ground because they're going to realize that there's only one true God. And they're going to be so afraid. Isaiah 2 and 21. And they're going to go into the clefts of rocks and into the tops of the ragged rocks for fear of the Lord and for the glory of his majesty when he ariseth to shake terribly the earth. Cease ye from man whose breath is in his nostrils. I love the way Isaiah ends this. He says, cease from man. Stop worshiping man. Stop following man now. He said, because his breath is in his nostrils. Wherein is he to be accounted of? He asked the question and closes out the chapter like that. You stop fearing, ceasing, seeking man, and depending on what he's established all around us, because you're living a facade. You're living in an illusion. You only believe what you see on TV, and they're behind the scenes laughing because they know they control 98% of the media. So they want to keep us distracted. But I love the way the prophet puts it. Cease from man. Come out from amongst her. I want to read this last chapter in Isaiah before we close out. Let's go to Isaiah 66. Man, I'd love to read this whole chapter, but I'm not going to do it. When you get some time, you read the whole chapter of Isaiah 66. I'm just going to read. I want to start from verse 19. No, I want to go further back to verse 15, Isaiah 66 and 15. For behold, the Lord will come with fire and with chariots like a whirlwind to render his anger with fury and his rebuke with flame and fire. Man, you have not seen the level of destruction that's getting ready to come on this earth to pay back all the bloodshed, the things that his people went through.
100 million of the tribe of Judah killed in the transatlantic slave trade. Gad and all the other so-called North American Indian slaves killed and given disease. Babies being fed to alligators and so that they can make more shoes and purses. Free labor from the slaves for years built these corporations. Corporations such as when they said they abolished slavery. They didn't abolish slavery. They changed the corporations, put us on the stock market, and got free labor from us for years to build corporations such as Levi Corporation. Imagine if you owned a company for 2 years and you had a bunch of slaves working for you and didn't have to pay them. You'd be rich and you'd pass that on to your family and it keeps going. Verse 15 lets you know why he's going to come back with such anger against the things that this world has done to his people. Isaiah 66 and 16, for by fire and by his sword will the Lord plead with all flesh. It doesn't mean he's going to beg. He's going to deal with you. That's what that means there. And the slain of the Lord shall be many. Many people will die in that day. There's going to be death all around you. Verse 17. They that sanctify themselves and purify themselves in the gardens behind one tree in the midst, meaning one after another, eating swine flesh and eating all types of crazy foods, the mouse, shall be consumed together, saith the Lord. What is verse 17 saying? Those that hide behind each other, those that are partying, reveling each other, have sex with each other, just all kinds of hedonism and lasciviousness and eating swine's flesh. Verse 17 says that he is going to consume and destroy those that eat swine's flesh. Nobody wants to believe that. I'll read again. Isaiah 66 and 17. They that sanctify themselves and purify themselves in the gardens behind one tree in the midst, eating swine's flesh and the abomination. And we know what is an abomination. I mean, homosexuality. Men dressing like women, women dressing like men. He said all these things are abominations unto me. But he's really pointing out what people are eating as well. He's saying all these people shall be consumed together. And so he's talking about you eating barbecue ribs at the picnic and saying it's all good. This ain't going to hurt you. I just bless it. You can't even pray a cold off of you and you're talking about you're going to bless some pork and eat it. Verse 18, for I know their works and their thoughts. It shall come that I will gather all nations and tongues, and they shall come and see my glory. So there will be some people saved, and those that are left, he's going to gather them and let them see for a testimony that he is the Most High. Verse 19, and I will set a sign among them, and I will send those that escape them unto the nations. What is he saying? That sign is his people and the ones of us that escape, his remnant. He's going to send us into the nations, to Tarshish, to Pul. Pul was a region in Africa, Lud. Look up these names in Wikipedia and you'll see the origin and how these names have been changed to different regions and countries today. They that
Lucifer, son of the morning, I'm gonna chase you out of earth.
All right, brothers and sisters, thanks for being patient. We've had a lot of technical difficulties, so I'm gonna go ahead and close out from here. It seems like something's going on with the Wi-Fi in the area. We covered today Micah, the fourth chapter. We found precepts in Isaiah, the second chapter, and also Isaiah 66, verses 15 through 24. You get an opportunity to go ahead and read those, study those scriptures, and we want to apologize once again. So this is Elder B at Last Ministries, House of Israel, a deliverance assembly. This is a day the Most High has made. Shabbat Shalom, Barak Atah. The only for sure answer to the only for sure obstacle to truth is to think that you already have it, for truth is a journey, not a destination. Be blessed. Enjoy the rest of Shabbat. We will try to continue the Most High to say the same this coming week.
Lucifer, son of the morning, I'm gonna chase you out of earth.
Outer space to find another race.